This is the Android Buffet Podcast, episode number 446, recorded Wednesday, June 19th, 2019, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Android Buffet Podcast.
Yay!
Yes, it's yay every week.
Yay!
So, we are back for another episode. Last week, we did ask if anybody would write us, and we did get some writing.
We did.
Do you want to do a dramatic reading of the writing we received?
Ooh, can I?
Yes, you can.
Alrighty. This is going to be so much fun. So, I got a chuckle out of the title of this podcast. I ride a motorcycle to work frequently. For many years, my wife, worrying about me, wanted me to let her know that I'd made it okay. Since I'm lazy, those notices have deteriorated to a short SMS stating, "Not dead." Well, I'm not dead, and I'm still enjoying your podcast. Sincerely, Jim.
Disclaimer, there was no sincerely. And also, that may or may not be what Jim sounds like.
No, but it's Jim, what I sound like.
Yes. Jim may or may not comment on the dramatic rendition. We also did get a comment from our old associate, the Door-to-Door Geek, that there may have been some audio issues with last week's episode. I could not hear it, but if anybody else did, please send us a note. Because
we don't trust Door-to-Door Geek.
No,
think he's making fun of us.
No, I actually do trust him. I believe very specifically that he hears something. It's just the fact that I don't hear it and therefore cannot figure out how to address it. Frustrates me. So as a secondary measure this week, I am going to upload a completely unadjusted version of this episode and send him the link in the event that there's a problem.
Tell you what to do to fix it?
I don't know. I'm back to, can I fix something I can't hear? But
you could follow instructions by somebody who could hear it.
Yeah. But I trust his expertise in the matter as he is a frequent podcast listener.
Yes. And a frequent podcast maker.
Yes. So beyond that, I had to do some home automation maintenance this week.
Oh, no.
Well, I have to do more of it because I continue to have these problems where Zigbee and Z-Wave devices tend to fall off the network and have to be reset. So there's this periodic wireless home automation radio maintenance problem.
See, that just would not be acceptable.
Well, that's why I would like to figure out what to do about it. Now, my devices do occasionally fall off the network, despite the fact that there's no reason I know of they should. And I'd have to power cycle them or repair them. And then there are other devices that never seem to fall off the network. So I have no explanation. But some of my sensors need to be reset.
I'm sorry.
Well, things happen. So, let's see what's been going on this week. Apparently there were some Pixel 4 rumors that were confirmed by Google.
Yes, because if you can't beat them, join them.
Well, I sort of, you know, I don't usually talk about device rendering rumors. But Google's response was one that I thought was worth mentioning. So, after the rumors, they tweeted, "Well, since there seems to be some interest, here you go. Wait till you see what it can do, Pixel 4. So, they decided to post a rendering of their own.
Yep. With a square bubble.
Well,
a square camera bubble. Bubble? Is bubble the right word?
A
square
bump.
Camera bulge?
I'll go with bulge.
Okay. And one of the articles that I'd read about this said that they were releasing this image early to avoid anyone saying that they copied the iPhone, because rumors are that the next iPhone will have a square bulge. That just sounds dirty.
I don't know why things need bulges, but it certainly is a new approach. If you continue into our show notes, I also shared a story with an opinion piece that Google should either do change logs in the Play Store or not, that they should set an example for other individuals about how to do a change log.
Yeah.
After their
recent... Change logs are hard, man.
Yeah, after their recent... What's new? Information not provided by developer.
Okay, now that's kind of silly. But a good change log is hard. It takes a lot of effort. And especially when you fix a whole lot of tiny stuff.
Well, I'm not talking about... change logs should document the most important things you did, not necessarily everything.
And sometimes you don't want to document a change because it's a... fix of something stupid you did earlier.
Well, I'm going to read you some change logs. These are just the latest apps updated on my phone. Tell me if any of these you find helpful. Enjoy our latest update where we have fixed some bugs and improved our app to provide you a seamless experience.
Yeah, see, that's just putting something there for the sake of putting something there.
Yeah, now then we have Plex, which is installed on my phone since I have a Plex server there. New in the latest version, improved performance, hitting back, fades transition, could resume item from wrong offset, ensure video player uses any manually selected version, supports Samsung lock screen media controls, improve playback from voice search, ensure devices are available when the application starts for casting. For more, see this link.
Seems like but Plex does pretty good.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing sort of their desktop apps.
I'm doing sort of the contrast. So here's AR Core by Google. What's new? Improved performance and battery life. Here's one. Fixed some bugs.
Yay!
Bug fixes and performance improvements. That's also back from Google. That's from Google Keep, which I use to keep shopping lists. Here we are. Slack. We tweaked some things too small to notice or too difficult to explain. We'll return you to your regular, more interesting types of release next time, we hope.
At least they're honest.
We update the app regularly. It's like housekeeping, squashing bugs, cleaning up code, and other small but mighty improvements. We're working to make Firefox for Android better with each new release. Read the release notes to learn about any new features, bugs, performance, bug fixes, and performance improvements at this link. So at least they sent you somewhere to read actual useful information.
Yep.
But here's one I could sort of... here's an example of where you can not identify everything, but identify important features. This is for the Ring app. This new update includes bug fixes, performance improvements, and the following new features. Two-factor authentication, SOS for Ring Alarm. By the way, two-factor authentication is not a feature, it's a bug.
That's kind of funny.
It's two-factor authentication using SMS. That's a bug. If it was using some sort of secure two-factor authentication, then yes. But again, most of these apps, I'm just saying, okay, Google Drive, bug fixes and performance improvements. Bug fixes. Oh, here's one. Google Street View. Easily record Street View as you walk, bike, or drive with the new video mode, available only to Street View trusted photographers. And Local Guide 6 Plus. So that's at least helpful. The Google app. Use voice commands while navigating. The Waze app. Saving time and avoiding traffic is even easier with this update. So what do your change logs say, since you said they're hard?
Oh, they're proprietary.
No, I wasn't asking for specific. I'm saying, do you usually think that your change logs are useful?
My change logs are useful to other developers, but they're not often useful to end users.
Well, I write change logs and I try to identify features and not, you know, if I fixed a bug, I try to be very brief about what the bug was about. I try to put in things that are relevant to individuals who are users as opposed to not simply ones who are developers. But that's me.
You're a better person than I am.
I'm also not a developer by trade. I want people to actually read the changelog, and I'm a little annoyed that people don't. Then they come to me and say, what is this feature? Or where did you tell anybody about that? And I said, did you actually read? I said, I did. No. Okay. Oh, well. Moving along, AutoSync for Google Drive offers sync of files and folders to Google Drive, which may offer a replacement for the photo to drive sync that Google is taking away.
Interesting.
Yep. If you use the HD Home Run, which, as you know, I've used for years, which is a device that takes your either over-the-air television signals or your cable card signals and converts them into a nice networked stream, they now have a over-the-air live app for Roku, which is in beta.
This is super cool. Now, I'm never going to use this simply because I don't watch live TV. I like to pause and rewind and fast forward and stuff. However, I think it's awesome that they're doing this. I do. I love it.
Well, I think they sort of realized that there's another market for their devices, not just the hobbyist, but somebody who just wants to watch live TV and doesn't necessarily want to do it using more conventional means.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, of course, that's annoying is that they haven't released the HD Home Run Prime 6, which they've been promising for a while.
What is the HD Home Run Prime 6?
So the HD Home Run Prime is a three-tuner cable card-enabled device. It's the only one that they offer right now. So it's the Home Run Prime is probably about 5 or 6 years old, I think.
Yes.
That they haven't updated it. And they've been promising a refresh of the hardware. So they've said coming soon in 2019, which it's on their website right now if you look, is the Home Run Prime 6, which is an updated version of the Prime, but also has 6 tuner capability instead of 3. So it's the only product they haven't refreshed in years. So it is due for a refresh. So hopefully that would include a lot of other features. For example, additional processing on board, because chips do get better.
Yep, yep.
But while the last interview that I saw with them said that they had decided to focus on other products and they had pushed this product, let's just say, back.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it's released this year. I would consider upgrading my HD Home Run Prime 3 to a 6, not for the extra tuners, but for possibly increased stability.
Do you run into stability issues?
Well, technology marches on. Remember,
cable. So you want better for the sake of better, which is okay. I mean, that's not a problem.
I'm hoping that.
I mean, that's why we all upgrade our phones, right?
Well, I'm also hoping that they start doing 4K content on my network. I hear that Fios has 2 experimental 4K channels, and I'm curious to see what that means. I'm cool. Still lacking, some sort of 4K reference. You know how they had these reference discs where you could see, you know, the best that 4K or the best that HD or what have you has to offer?
Yep.
I'm waiting for one of those for 4K. I have not seen one yet. Where I could, where I could plop people in front of the television and say, this is why I have a 4K television. Other than the fact I needed a new television and 4K was reasonably priced, at least until the tariffs from China come in. I'm not making a political statement. I'm just saying prices are going up.
It's cool.
Yeah. No, I know. I know we're both fine with political statements in that regard.
Yep.
Chrome now supports system set dark modes.
Wow.
So this is from the Chrome 76 beta, which is coming. And apparently operating systems now support inverted color schemes with a system setting, which is dark theme. And apparently there's now a media query for CSS that allows a website or web app to adopt the preferred display mode of the user.
That would be cool. Now,
well, if you use Firefox, they already have it.
Do they?
Well,
I don't know of any sites that respect it. Do you?
Actually, I did find one. When I did a Google search for prefers-color-scheme, first of all, I will recommend the caniuse.com site if you ever want to know whether or not your browser supports any sort of browser-based feature.
Mm-hmm.
So Firefox has supported this since version 67, which was released in May. Chrome will support it as of 76. Safari apparently supports it as of 12.1. Apparently, the Mac was a major driver for this, and of course, Firefox for Android supports it as of 67 as well. But when I was looking, I found some references to some people's personal sites that actually did support it.
Nice.
Where's that link?
But no major sites. But of course, the major sites are all pixel perfect PSD stuffs.
Yeah, so I found one person's personal site that actually does apparently do this.
Mm-hmm.
Where the, but it's mostly their comment about how they did it sort of to technically play with the future.
Cool. Useful.
Yeah, so this would be the site of one Peter Molnar at petermolnar.net. So apparently his site does it, but again, back to it seems to be mostly because he was playing with the future.
And I can totally understand and respect that.
Yeah, although I will recommend his site because when I was looking, he has some nice pictures. If you like pictures.
And it's dark on my screen.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
It is not on mine because I have not found out where the Linux option is for that. I'm sure it's there somewhere. I think it's somewhere in the GTK settings, but I haven't gone to look. But on mine, when I loaded it up initially, it was light.
It is absolutely dark, which is cool.
Yeah. So you support that feature without knowing it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because that, well, that was in Chrome. Let's see. See what it looks like in Firefox. Also dark.
Really? When I got it, it was light.
Let's see what it looks like in Internet Explorer.
But it's possible that the default for my operating system is the light mode.
It shows up in dark in Internet Explorer.
Okay. I have no explanation, but either way, it was the only...
try Microsoft Edge.
It was the only... I don't think Edge supports it, though. But
shows up as dark.
Okay. Must be a weirdness on my side. Or maybe I'm actually supporting the future. But I don't know. Either way, it was the only site I could find that said that it supported that feature. But remember, it's only been in Firefox for a month. It's only been in Safari for a few months. So I think more people will support it. There was this interesting story, the SimSwap horror story. So this was written by an author at ZDNet. Apparently this reporter, and if you remember, this happened a few years ago where a reporter was compromised and wrote about his nature. So this is by Matthew Miller, who's a contributor to ZDNet, who's noted as started using mobile devices in 97 and has been writing news, reviews, and opinion pieces, is a co-host of the Mobile Tech Roundup podcast and an author of three Wiley companion series books. So this is somebody who has a long-standing relationship with technology. And it's sort of, you know, you get to this conclusion that if somebody who knows something about technology was caught by something like this, then what hope is there for anybody else? So just to summarize a little of this article, on Monday, June 10th, he was awoken to be told that his Twitter account had been hacked. And picked up his iPhone to discover that there was a text message that read T-Mobile alert. The SIM card for this account has been changed. If this change is not authorized, call this number.
Ooh.
Now, seeing as they took away his cell service, he could not call that number for help.
That's kind of funny. I mean, not really, but...
Well, no, it's... So, he happened to have another phone. You know, many tech reporters in my experience may have a second phone because they test a bunch of stuff, and they want to have a phone that's working in case whatever they're testing isn't working. So he called and told them that the physical SIM is still in the phone and that he didn't authorize any change to the account. He got back his number by giving them the SIM card ID number and then having them send a text to other phone numbers in the account where they read back the code. He asked why they would allow somebody to call up and take his phone number without approval. The representative said they can't discriminate or tell who is over the phone, and as long as someone has key information, then a swap could be authorized. So apparently your phone number can be stolen by anybody who may know a little bit about you.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, so as a result, they were able to steal his Twitter account. And apparently he's posted about 30,000 tweets over 13 years, and they had deleted a lot of them. However, he made sure to have two-factor authentication enabled, except two-factor authentication on Twitter is text messaging sent to a cell phone, which may be useless if somebody stole your SIM.
And which seems to directly relate to your earlier statement about...
Well, no, I felt
2FA
that...
2FA via SMS being a bug.
I felt that long before I read this article, but this sort of drives it home. It's not secure.
Yep.
Also, SMS by itself is not secure, even if they don't steal your phone number. Now his comment, when he regained his cell phone number, sending a code to that number still won't let him get access to Twitter because the email address assigned to that Twitter account must work. So let's get to the next part of the problem. Google wasn't going to work with him until he had his, Twitter wasn't going to work to him until he had his Google account back. So he tried to reset his Google services password, except the hacker had already changed most of the verification fields he'd set up to reset the password. So his recommendation is if you have a Google account, establish the following in case you're needing to reset your password. Google Authenticator, cell phone number for text code, 8-digit backup code, other phone number associated with your account, email for recovery, and the month and year you started using Gmail. Now, he had some of the information, but the hacker changed everything in the list except for one email address that was still controlled. Despite the fact that email was used to fill out the form, Google has not moved forward in trying to help recover the account. Gets better. The Google Fi SIM that he had used to call T-Mobile had been deactivated, and apparently that was also this. So the longtime Google Fi number has been purged by the same hacker. Wow. A bunch of things have been backed up to Google Drive. That's gone. He pays for Google Drive, Google Fi, and Google Play Movies, so there's no customer service or phone numbers for anybody who pays for services or those who only use free services. So Google has no way for you to actually talk to them about a problem, even if you are a paying customer, as opposed to somebody just using their free services.
Wow.
Gets better. Given that he had two-factor authentication enabled for his bank account and the bank account info on Google Drive, the thief started stealing his money. Apparently, the criminal used the bank account to purchase $25,000 in Bitcoin. Fortunately, the bank locked the transaction down because most people don't just one day purchase $25,000 in Bitcoin. So fortunately, that was stopped as a security measure. But he realized that every person and company that he wrote a check to over the past couple of decades has the same information that the bank may have had. So, again, he's trusting the bank to protect his assets. Back to T-Mobile. Apparently, the company gave him, as you mentioned, the phone number back before he went on a business trip. And there were apparently some problems there. T-Mobile confirmed that it had once again taken away his SIM and given it to somebody else. So while he was away, they stole his SIM, and specifically he's using his SIM in this note to talk about his actual phone number. So not the module, they had disabled his SIM. He became enraged, and he told T-Mobile he wanted them to stop giving it away. but was told that this request was not possible. And while he had a PIN number associated with the SIM card, he doesn't know how the thief was able to get past the security. Apparently, T-Mobile has some sort of program where you can enable a requirement that the account can't be changed unless somebody goes into a store with at least one means of physical identification. However, they don't like to admit that this feature exists. So, apparently you have a problem should you want to suggest that the only way somebody should be able to hijack your phone number is in person.
So, what do you do?
Well, here's his recommendations. Let's see. In addition to contacting T-Mobile, Google, useless, and Twitter, useless, he took the following actions. File a police report with your local authorities. Again, probably also useless because most local authorities are not really equipped to handle cyber crimes. Turn on a credit freeze and fraud alert with the three credit reporting bureaus. Fill out a report with the Federal Trade Commission. Make sure your financial institutions know of the possible identity theft. Change the passwords and email for all accounts that may be connected with the stolen account. Consider using an email and password for logging into accounts rather than simply relying on Facebook, Google, or Twitter as your global login for services. Consider using password manager software or letting your device help you create extremely long and complicated passwords. Close out old accounts you never use. And while two-factor authentication is a minimum standard, look for options beyond having a text message sent for verification. So, I don't know, maybe it's time for a digital audit. Go through all of the accounts that you know about and see what are the emergency account recovery settings and how might you better secure them. But while this is sort of tangential to the show, most of the people on the show who listen to the show, I assume, have a large digital footprint.
Yeah.
So it is worth reminding people that they should be secure. I do know people who use the same password on everything. And those people, I've been warning for years that they are just asking for it. They've been lucky so far, but that luck doesn't last forever.
Sure doesn't.
Moving along, smartphone-only internet use has doubled in 6 years, according to one analysis. So this is, let's see, I always forget who does these polls. This was the Pew Research Center. So their mobile technology and home broadband survey found that out of 1,502 participants, 96% owned a smartphone, 96% owned a cell phone, 84% had a smartphone. 46% said that they mostly use the internet with their phones, 30% with a computer, tablet, or other device. The last time that question was asked in 2013, only 34% primarily used the internet on their phones.
This story completely shocked me.
How so?
I did not realize that so many people, I mean, you know, I've grown up with computers are always in the house. And since internet connections were a thing, we've always had an internet connection. But apparently that's not everybody.
Yeah.
The research showed that, you know.
Are you up to date with the youngsters?
I guess I have a 12-year-old. And she has a computer, but she almost exclusively uses her cell phone.
That was sort of the comment I was going to make. Most people use computers like for, you know, typing and other things, but people seem to do everything else on their phones. On Sunday, I went over to New Jersey to help somebody put together an arcade, which I sort of mentioned in passing that I was going to do. This is a house that has many young people. As in under 18 type young people. And again, during the course of the day, I saw all of them, you know, using their phones extensively. And there was one computer that I noticed in the house, although I wasn't going around searching every single bedroom. Most people, when you visit their houses, you don't look through every room. There seemed to be one computer that was located in the corner of the kitchen. They had a playroom, and that had no computers. And when for the work I needed some form of laptop, they had to go find where they put it. So I don't know. And, you know, conversely, there's a large percentage of the country who don't have access to good internet. So a lot of them don't have access at home to internet. Therefore, their phone is their only connection device.
Yeah, it just, wow.
I could not, you know, I do a lot.
Good find, man. This was interesting stuff.
Well, I do a lot on my phone. A lot of the stuff I do on my phone is reading. So I do a lot of reading on my phone. I don't do that so much in front of the computer. But when I want to actually do something, I tend to be at the computer.
Yep, me too. But, well, I rarely... I use my phone for communication. And my phone is not a computer to me. It is... I use it for internet stuff. In a pinch, if I'm not at home.
Well, you're...
But most of the time, I'll just wait until I get home.
Well, you're also different because, remember, you work at home.
Yes.
So your home is your... So, for me, if I'm at home, the computer's there, I'm probably going to use it. Every so often, I'm on the couch reading, but that's, again, back to me saying that I read a lot on my phone. But I also read a lot using other devices. I have a Kindle here somewhere, but... I say somewhere because the room is messy at the moment. But when I'm somewhere else, for example, I go to work, as in I do not work in my house.
Right.
So when I take a break at work and eat lunch, we have a break room, and that is not really a place where you bring a computer. So I would sit there and read on my phone quietly. If I am commuting somewhere, I might use my phone. If I'm not the one driving. If I'm the one driving, I do not use my phone for obvious reasons. I sort of want to avoid dying.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. In certain places, my habits have changed and I do use my phone more. In other places, I'm still using the computer just as much as I would otherwise. And I prefer anything productive, I prefer doing on a computer. I consider my usage of my phone to be very passive. And unlike some people, I almost never watch video on my phone.
I do that a lot. I do watch a lot of video on my phone.
No, I know plenty of people who do. I just almost never do it because, again, at the times when I want to watch video, there's usually a better screen around.
Sure.
I do a lot of audio listening on my phone because at the times when I want to listen to only audio, my phone is the best option. For example, when I take a walk, when I happen to be driving, when I have the phone hooked into the car. Anyway, worth thinking about. And finally, Chrome is adding Send to Self. So this is a feature that's been built into Firefox Sync, but they are bringing this feature to Chrome. And remember, they used to have it.
Or Chromium OS?
This is Chrome.
Are you sure?
It's built into Chrome, and Chrome OS is actually one of the... Now, this is about the Chrome OS part.
Yeah.
But it is being built into the Chrome browser.
Ah. Okay.
So the article is specifically about Chrome. Now, if you look at the article in here, with Android Chrome, you might be able to do this as well. So for a while there was the send to Chrome, send to phone feature.
Yes, which was awesome.
Yeah. Now, if you look, there's some things here where it says, using the Android Chrome Dev, you can click on a URL and then hit share, and you should see Chrome as one of the options, according to this. So I've been using Firefox, so I don't necessarily see this, but they say that there's a way to do it on here. So I'm going to take the word that this is something that they're going to be rolling out to phones, because, again, it's the same thing. But here we are. To send from Android to desktop, click in the address bar and click the share button. Then look for send to devices in the native share dialog. So they're saying that there is such a thing. Do you have Chrome up right now?
I do.
On your computer and on your phone?
Yes.
Okay, well, they're saying that if you go into Chrome, that feature is there.
But I'm using Chrome 74.
Yes, so you probably have to wait for the newer version, but apparently it's saying that this is possible. So I wanted to see if the version I had this, but Well, again, remember this is Chrome OS 76. I'm not sure what version has the other feature. It may just be Chrome 76 has that feature also. And it says that this is an experiment that you'd have to enable.
If you're using Chrome for a video conference, don't upgrade Chrome because it'll boot, it'll close the chat.
Are you using it for a video conference?
Yes, I was. And then I saw that I was using 74. So I clicked relaunch to update. Now I'm running Chrome 75. So 76 being still in beta.
Yeah, by the way,
I will not have it.
Chrome on Android, I went into the flags to see the setting is actually here. It says if you go into the flags on Chrome for Android, send tab to self allows users to receive tabs from other sync devices, and send tab to self show sending UI allows senders to send tabs by accessing the sending user interface, requires send tab to self to also be sent. Send tab to self broadcast allows users to broadcast the tab they send to all of their devices instead of targeting only one device.
That's cool.
So if I turned all of these features on, enabled, I could go to another device that has Chrome, and despite the fact that I'm not currently using it as my main browser, I do always keep it to see what things look like. I probably would be able to send things between it. Either way, it's already built into the system I'm using. That's all. So, anything else going on this week with you, Jerry, of an Android buffet-y nature?
Not really.
Okay. So, next Wednesday, we will have a show without any changes. The week after that is July 3rd, which is the eve of Independence Day.
Yes.
Why is it that some holidays have an eve and some holidays don't? So New Year's has an eve, but Independence Day does not have an eve?
It does not.
Okay. Why not? What makes it that a holiday has an eve or not?
Maybe when the traditional celebration of that holiday is.
Okay.
So for like Christmas, traditional celebration of Christmas is early in the morning. So you get an eve. Whereas July the 4th, traditional celebration is normally in the afternoon or the evening. So you don't get an eve.
I just think about random things like that.
Does my theory hold up?
It seems to work. Where I come from, all holidays have an eve, but that's more of a practical thing. All of the holidays that I celebrate for religious purposes are based on the lunar calendar, therefore they start at sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there's always an eve.
Ah.
But the holiday ends at sunset also, so it balances out. Anyway, that said, I don't think... Are you going away anywhere during the season? That would affect the show in the next few weeks?
I will be out of town in the middle of July.
Okay. Do you think it will affect your recording schedule?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about your adventures. I still have to schedule an adventure. Although next Thursday I am going to a conference for the weekend. Hopefully I will be less tired by the time the episode is ready on the 26th.
All right.
Okay.
So, that concludes another exciting episode of the Android Buffet.
Yes. Oh, and by the way.
Yes.
Speaking of that, I do want to thank Jim, if we didn't thank him earlier.
Seriously, right?
Yes. I appreciate the many communications we've gotten from Jim over the years. Because as you may recall, this is not the first Jim communication.
I'm just, yeah.
I know you're bad.
We love you, Jim.
You're bad with that, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So just to remind you quickly before we go of the many incidents of Jim communications, Jim has written us several times over the life of this particular program. And we continue to appreciate Jim.
Very much so.
Yes. By the way, you can be like Jim, too.
Be like Jim.
Yes.
You can send your wife a text message that says, not dead.
You can send us a message. We are still available at podcast@androidbuffet.com. We do have a Facebook page. I don't usually go on Facebook, but I'm sure I get an email if somebody sends me something there. We are available through the old voicemail line, which is, of course, 2012-WINNICA. And there is, of course, the comment page on the Android Buffet website, which is available and would also notify me of any submissions. For example, someone who wrote in saying that they could help with our graphic design, or somebody who wrote in saying that they are representing a company that represents real money gaming and betting related clients. And apparently Android Buffet is the best place for real money gaming paid articles. Clearly by somebody who didn't read that we don't actually post any articles. So hopefully we will get some comments. We always love them. And just remember, don't feel guilty if you do not choose to write in. That just makes us appreciate you in your absence. Right, Jerry?
100% and absolutely.
Yes. And remember, once again, our anniversary is coming up. I didn't get you anything. Sorry. But we recorded the first episode again in July of 2010. So we're coming on 9
Wowzers. Years.
I told you, we have to do something special for that 10th year anniversary.
We do.
My suggestion is that I come to Jacksonville, Florida, and we record an episode in person again, which we have not done in years.
That would be awesome.
And I get to see Jacksonville.
Yep.
Well, I'm
and my puppy.
Well, you'll have to tell me about all the sights in Jacksonville. I'm not while I will certainly see your puppy, I am not sure if that is a sightseeing attraction for Jacksonville, Florida.
Well, I don't know. She's real pretty.
Yeah, but I'm sure the Jacksonville Tourist Board does not include see Jerry Jones's puppy.
Thank goodness.
You know how many tour buses
she gets enough traffic without advertisement.
Yeah, but also, you know how many tour buses would be visiting her house?
Yeah, but she's really pretty.
I'm taking your word for it.
Aren't you a girl? Who's a pretty girl? Yes, you are. So pretty, Luna. Sleepy, Luna.
On that note.
Bye, folks.
Goodbye.